Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Juice Jack Knockreiner,
CTO of WatchGuard.
Hopefully you weren't wearing
Sorry,
headphones.
Sorry, that's my wrestling alias.
Bonesaw's ready.
On today's episode, we have a few different news stories, including hacks revolving the latest addition to our streaming platforms, some cryptocurrency hacks, and then, as Corey just hinted at, the dumbest name that has ever been given to a security trend. With that...
For now. Yeah, we know more now. Are coming.
Let's go ahead and jump into the news. And our first story today revolves around a brand new streaming service that just came out, which I think both Corey and I have subscribed to for a single show, basically. Though you did say
Do
you
we
watched...
buzz market on this podcast now?
Honestly, does
Star Wars need more buzz marketing, or should I say Disney?
The Mandalorian is such a dang good show.
It is.
I'm very happy with it.
Spoiler alert for 1 second. Turn off your ears if you haven't seen it. Everyone loves Baby Yoda.
Yes, absolutely. And turn your ears back on. Anyways, so Disney Plus just came out, what, a few weeks ago now? And very soon after that launch, though, there were reports all over Twitter and Reddit of people saying that their accounts had been hacked and taken over. And around the same time, these accounts were starting to show up on various hacking forums for sale, prices ranging from $3 to $11, which is kind of funny because $11 is more than Disney Plus actually costs. The attackers were also posting just pastes of valid credentials on like Pastebin and other websites of accounts they had taken over basically for free. Now, Disney has so far stated that they found no evidence of a security breach, and they are continuing to audit their systems, which means really there's only one other way that attackers could have gotten a hold of these accounts, and it's a credential stuffing attack like we've seen a whole lot of recently. If you're not familiar with credential stuffing attack, it's where attackers use credentials from other stolen locations, other breaches, and they just try them in other accounts because, believe it or not, people are kind of bad at picking strong, unique passwords. Any feedback on that, Corey?
I think you're right. I think it's credential stuffing. I guess we'll see if Disney's hacked, but yes.
So far they say no, and really this is, and we see this all the time with various websites, especially high profile ones.
We've
like
warned
this.
About it. That's why we say, you know, if you use LinkedIn or any of the many password breach sites now, you still have to worry about that type of password leak as a corporate user, because a lot of your employees will be using it. And that's the biggest takeaway to even the smallest site having a password breach is this type of credential stuffing.
Yep. And so, I mean, obviously there's a few ways you can combat that. First, just don't reuse passwords between accounts. Like both you and I use password managers where I have a 20-something character password individual to each account that I have no idea what it is, honestly. It just
I tried to go to 32 once, but I found some websites actually limit the size of your passwords, which kind of sucks when you have a cool password manager remembering really long random things for you.
I was just actually changing my password on like one of my like credit card accounts or something, and they had the worst password rules ever. It was like you couldn't have two characters the same next to each other. They only supported a certain subset of like special characters, which basically just broke all of LastPass's like auto-generating things, and I had to mess around until I could get one that worked.
So 6 years ago now, but I had a bank that actually limited you at 12 characters for your password, and that I thought was super silly.
It doesn't even make like what kind of data field only takes
I don't even know why they did it, although they had similar things to you as far as some special characters didn't work either, and they wouldn't take a space or an underscore, so I couldn't use my actual sentence.
Are they concerned about SQL injection through your password or something?
Who knows? But they changed, by the way. This bank in question, which I will not name right now.
Good job, Bank of America.
Yeah, that was that. That's it. That's the one I use. That was 5 years ago. They have since changed. Although they still don't have 2FA.
Yeah, and so that's another tip where use multi-factor everywhere you can. I actually checked. Disney Plus, as of right now, does not support multi-factor authentication, which is a little annoying, but... I guess it is a new service and they've got growing pains, but hopefully they get that added, because I imagine they're going to be a pretty high target.
They definitely need to add multi-factor at this point, you know.
I mean, it's easy on their part to add it. Like, there are so many different options, even for as large of a company, especially for as large of a company as Disney, to roll out literally anything. Like, we always kind of poo-poo on text-based multi-factor, but even that's better than nothing.
As the we poo-poo on it as a form of weak multi-factor, but I think both of us say if you have no other options but text-based as a second factor, absolutely use it. We poo-poo because it's a weak nowadays form of multi or 2FA. There are ways that bad guys can still get that text message, but it still is a roadblock. It's still another barrier for them.
Yep. So hopefully they add something soon. I haven't checked. Does Netflix have MFA?
I actually don't think they do.
Man.
And I think that the reason people like Netflix and banks, this is pure conjecture though, but a lot of them, we wouldn't consider it a factor, but a lot of them are doing really heavy data fraud monitoring. So they're paying attention to our location. I don't know about you, but when I do things like Netflix or Amazon or even my bank site logins from unusual places in the world as I travel, which obviously makes my time zone different, I will get little email warnings asking me to say, hey, was this really your login? So I think that some of them argue they might not be making us do a second factor of authentication for usability and friction reasons, but they are actually monitoring logins and they might have mechanisms that are looking for behavioral-based bad logins.
Which is cool.
That's great, but
I wish they'd still offer.
Yeah, I don't think it's enough. Like, as a user, I want multi-factor as well.
I'm fine with the friction of having to enter in a password or click an OK button.
I'm totally with you. It's much better than trying to recover your YouTube channel or your Twitter account when someone hijacks it.
Or get your Disney Plus account off the dark web. Yeah. Basically, they're going in there, taking over the account, changing the password, and then posting it for sale. And by the time you can go in and like reset the password and the email account, it's usually gone and damage is done. So.
Although at the very least, you could probably cancel that account quickly and just not pay.
Yes. Good point. But then I lose my viewing history of the single show that I've watched two episodes of.
Open a new one.
So next up on the news is a hack revolving around cryptocurrency. So there are, I think last time I checked.
That funny money Mark likes so much.
Exactly.
I'm kidding. God.
There's like 1,700 different quote-unquote mainstream cryptocurrencies now.
Blows my mind. I remember when things like Doggo or whatever.
Dogecoin.
Was a joke. Yeah. And now people are actually using it. I mean, it actually has some value.
They sponsored the, what was it, the some bobsled team. I want to say like from the Bahamas or Jamaica or something like that.
But it was literally made as a joke, if I remember correctly.
It was, yes. It was a meme coin, but and other examples of non-meme coins, Monero is a pretty popular one. It's really one of the more privacy-focused ones where they are able to hide transaction amounts, sender and recipient, a lot better than, like, say, Bitcoin.
And that might be why I would say, besides being popular as just a legitimate cryptocurrency, it's one of the most targeted ones by threat actors, in part because of what you just said. But the other half of that, I believe, is the way it's the kind type of coin you can actually mine with GPU, and that's why things
CPU.
Like script. Or I'm sorry. Yes, you corrected me correctly. You don't need a GPU to mine it, which means things like JavaScript miners are much easier with Monero, if I understand right.
So not all cryptocurrency algorithms, like hashing algorithms, are created the same. Bitcoin is one where even a GPU isn't enough now. You need really specific hardware in order to make any real money mining. Ethereum's one where it runs pretty okay on GPUs, but ASICs are starting to take over now too. Monero, though, is one where it is CPU. It was designed to be easy for CPU mining, which is why it shows up so much in cryptojacking or cryptocurrency mining malware now, where we've talked about it quite a few times. If you go to a site hosting a crypto miner like CoinHive or what's left of CoinHive, it can sit there and use your computer resources to mine cryptocurrency in the background without you knowing. Well, this particular news story is a different kind of attack that hit Monero recently. And it was just this last week. It was all discovered really when someone went to go download a copy of the Monero cryptocurrency wallet from getmonero.org. And as all good security people do, they went and checked the hashes of the file download to see if the file was the correct file for that particular wallet. And as they were checking the hashes, they noticed that it was actually different than what was posted on the site and on the GitHub account. When they opened up the application and checked the individual files, all the files were the same except for the command line interface wallet tool, which was a different hash. And so they opened up a ticket on GitHub, said, what gives? This hash is different. And after a really short investigation, it was found that someone had compromised the Monero website and uploaded basically a malicious version of the wallet command line tool, which included code for stealing people's cryptocurrency out of it if they were using it. It's basically the worst case scenario when it comes to a cryptocurrency.
And another example of a kind of supply chain attack when legit software is backdoored because the organization behind it was somehow breached. Granted, this, as you say, was just the website and the downloader file that was hosted on the website. And some of the bigger supply chain hacks we've seen in the past, they might have actually even compromised source code servers and stuff like that. Yep. But still, I mean, this is a classic supply chain attack. There's been a lot of Linux projects where someone gets access and throws in a Trojan until some smart security researcher this one finds it.
Quite a few last year, I think, where attackers are starting to go after the libraries that a lot of code projects use.
And I think remember some Python ones.
They uploaded compromised a Python library, a popular one, and suddenly all the applications that use that library have their malicious code in it.
So I bring nothing to do with the Monero story, but this is a class of attack we are seeing repeated over and over, and actually has been associated with some of our past predictions in past years.
Yeah, exactly. In this case, luckily, they detected it pretty quick within the same day. The Monero team, whoever the team is behind it, I actually have no idea. I assume they're all volunteers or something. There's no Monero company,
right? I don't
know.
Anyways,
the Monero team was quick to react. They pulled down the binary, put up a correct one, and they actually posted a blog post on getmonero.org with instructions for even really non-tech-savvy people to go figure out if their file, if they have a compromised version of the wallet and how to fix it too, which is good because even though it's cryptocurrency, I'm sure there's still a lot of people not my mom, but people similar to my mom that might have bought into it and suddenly got a compromised wallet.
Yep.
So
I mean, how would a normal person know? I would say, other than people like maybe you and me, and I'll even admit that 25% of the time, who downloads the SHA-2 hash and actually compares it against the binary that often? It's something everyone should do, similar to checking the fingerprint of someone you've shared a PGP key with. But
I would say
many people don't.
Like, I don't always check the hashes for things I download. Like, I guess I don't care if my Microsoft Teams version is compromised. But when it comes to, like, a cryptocurrency wallet, that is definitely one where I would go and check the hash because
it's literally
money. You
remind folks all the time, it's money.
Yeah, and if someone steals it, especially with Monero, there's no bank that can revert that transfer. It's gone, period. Yeah. So if you do have cryptocurrency, like, this is a real threat, and there are other threats out there. So you have to be really mindful of where you're storing your money, what wallet you're using. We always say if you have large sums, store it in what's called a cold wallet. So something that really has never hit the internet, because your wallet is basically just a private and public key pair.
Yep.
And you can generate those entirely offline and transfer money to the public key and just keep that private key hidden somewhere.
It still can be hacked if your local computer, hopefully you have it on a USB key disconnected from the internet, but if that gets hacked. But on the flip side, the online wallet, the only difference, still public-private key pair, but you're storing it in someone's cloud because you're using that online wallet to make transactions easier. So you have to give them your keys and let them help you safeguard. Hopefully, you know, your keys are also somehow encrypted from them the way, you know, but
I
you
would
never
say
know.
Never store your money in an online wallet. Use it to, like, if you're going to make a transaction into another coin or into cash or whatever, that's fine, but
This is not tinfoil hat, but if you're the super, I have a brother-in-law that does a ton of cryptocurrency. He has a little bit of money. He has an online wallet. He does have an offline digital wallet he has for some other money, but he actually has a significant amount of cryptocurrency, and some he actually doesn't even trust to just digital offline USB wallets. He will literally print out the keys and put them in a fireproof safe.
Yep.
Usually he does it with a USB wallet, so he has the digital copy too, but he's worried that if he ever, you know, a magnet, a USB device failing, whatever it is, he doesn't only want it offline, but he wants the paper backup. And you got to remember that those digital keys are all you have for the money unless you print it out to recreate it. And even if you're going offline cold wallet, that's a digital device. How many times have you like created a CD, one of those writable CDs, and they no longer work 10 years later? Mm-hmm. I think we're going to find over the long term, even, you know, RAM and the USB keys can have failures. So you remember that the medium itself can go away.
A lot of times these keys, if you keep them offline, they're protected by like a password, or at least you can regenerate them using a password. And there's also been plenty of instances of people forgetting their password too, because they didn't store that somewhere. In fact, Trevor, one of our analysts, did a write-up about this guy he found on Reddit whose sole job is to chat with people that lost their password for their cryptocurrencies. And he basically tries to find out like all sorts of information about them, like, oh, what's your favorite color? Blah, blah. I mean, obviously there's are simplified versions, but like information about them, their personality, their password habits. And he uses that to basically set up this tool, which then tries to brute force possible passwords based off their profile he's built.
Oh, that's cool.
And apparently he's had some pretty decent success in
good
it.
Good way to take a huge password dictionary that's not efficient, but make it actually pretty damn efficient.
Yep, exactly. So I imagine we'll be seeing more of that kind of business opportunity in the future of cryptocurrency password recovery companies.
Instead of hard drive recovery, it's figure out my password on this key that has $100,000 that I forgot about. Maybe they can find some sort of drug sniffing dog or something that can just find, I don't even have a password, because when I think I've told you, I've lost 3 Bitcoin from 2009, mined before GPUs were
like $30,000.
It was nothing when I mined it. In fact, the USB key it's on is probably something like 32 megabytes back when that was the USB key. So if they can find somebody that can find where that key is in one of my boxes somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, even if you give them like a 10% little bonus, that's
at
still
this
like
point, I'll give them 50%.
It's time for you to go start digging through the parents' attic, Corey.
I bet you the 32 megabyte key probably doesn't even work. At the time, I did it just for fun because I...
USB 1.0 speeds.
No one was spending cryptocurrency. It was just a cool project, or specifically Bitcoin.
Don't know how much I have, but it is on a hard drive somewhere in my mom's basement somewhere. I've kept every hard drive I've ever owned, so I'm sure it's in there somewhere. I should probably look for that. Maybe I'll get...
So takeaway, Monero, their website was hacked. The cryptocurrency wasn't. The wallet might have been dangerous if you downloaded in a certain time, but treat this like money, man. A safe is not out of the question, a physical safe.
And buy more Bitcoin. Next news story. I want to preface this with, I think this is the dumbest name that anyone has ever given a security issue ever. It's stupid.
It depends on your outlook, right? If you're a serious security person like you and me, we'll both scoff at the silliness of this name. If you're press and you want to get your story out there, it's a fantastic name, because I'm sure all the any non-technical media will jump all over this. Almost sounds like something a steroid abuser would do.
Exactly.
So what is it that they would do?
Well, it's a new class of cyber threat that's really over the last month or so been gaining a lot of traction, including just this last week or so, an advisory from the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. There was an article in the New York Times a few days ago. They're calling it juice jacking.
Juice jacking.
Which one of the guys we work with...
I want to get jacked up on my liquid steroid.
One of the guys we work with pointed out in a Twitter reply to me that it sounds like when the bully steals your Capri Sun at lunch.
Aw, I feel bad for him. You'd only come up with that if you had experience.
Exactly. Poor Anthony. But juice jacking is where a cyber criminal sets up a malicious charging station that then exploits mobile phones to install malware when the user plugs their phone into that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, So there's been a few proof of concepts for it. Like there's a few different ways you can go about when you plug in your phone. If you like turn it on to share files, then obviously they can drop it on.
It's not that easy though.
No.
I mean, I think that the first, what you're getting at is this is purely legit. There has been research projects. The first was a long time ago. I forgot. It was something Slurp. And it was back when phones had no trust protections. And it wasn't hacking your phone or installing malware. As you suggest, it's just part of what happens when you plug in a data and charging cable is it exposes the files in the file system sometimes. Usually it's a special portion of the phone's file system to share media files, but it's not actually the full file system.
You can still get like your pictures,
exactly.
Notes, downloads.
So it was
like
something Slurp where you plug it in and it would just slurp everything off your phone. Now, there are protections for that. You can tell me the Android story, but nowadays, iPhone, any device with data you plug it into, you actually have to trust and re-enter your password on the phone before it allows it. And by the way, even when you use a biometric like I do, it doesn't let me do biometric authentication. It literally, it might be taking my biometric authentication, but it forces me to enter my PIN again.
On Android, I don't know if you can change the defaults. I know the defaults on mine are when I plug it into a computer, every time I am prompted to turn it into basically file share mode, picture share mode, whatever, different restricted modes of file transfer if I want to.
Now, the other way, and there have been research projects on this too, of installing automatically malware on your phone or another device. I've seen a couple things. I saw an iOS cable. It looked just like a normal, or say Android cable too. It looked like a normal phone cable, and it really wasn't any bigger. The USB plug is probably where there's some extra bits hidden, but it was still looked like a normal plug. Some guy put a Wi-Fi chip in a special plug, and it actually didn't hack your phone at all, but it was when you were plugging your phone into your own computer. So this is not a charging. This wouldn't be juice jacking at all, because you're plugging it in your computer in that case, but it would try to basically hijack your computer by opening up your file system through the Wi-Fi. And there have been one or two research projects where plugging it into a charger that's designed to hack your phone. Key point is they have to have a zero-day exploit on your phone. You know, you already have to have an existing vulnerability on the phone for that to work at all. So really, to me, the only legitimate, I mean, there's not many zero days floating around that I would see people using for this. Phone zero days are super expensive right now. It would be for the data case. And I think the data case is so freaking mitigated simply by new functionality we have on our phones.
I will say in the zero day case, if we're playing devil's advocate, let's say there is a vulnerability discovered that enables this, at least in the Android ecosystem, like phones stop getting updates after 6 months, basically, unless you're one of the big flagships, like a Google phone or a Samsung phone. If you're some other like crappy offshoot, you're probably not getting patches past 6 months, and there's a chance that you don't get this patch.
And even the ones you mentioned, there's this issue with, I guess, more in the Android world with the carrier versions of Android, even Samsung, having to be at least a few weeks, if not a few months, behind Google's official patch of Android, simply because they have their own bloat-filled version of Android that they have to update individually. So, yeah. I agree with you, it could happen. But I think what I do want to anti-FUD this, because it's getting a lot of press and media will love it because of the cool term and it just plug
juice
it in
jacket.
And it will happen. But before, it is possible, very unlikely that 0 day will hack your phone though. But more importantly, I don't even know, there's been research on it. I have never read one story of an in the wild discovery of one of these.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like happening in the real world as far as I know. I mean, maybe there are stories we're missing, but when I'm trying to tell audience or you guys or you telling your employees of what to worry about, this isn't high on my list simply because I don't see bad guys exploiting it yet, whether or not they could. I would be worried more about the Wi-Fi networks I'm connecting to in an airport than I would the charger stations.
Yep. But let's say you are worried. There are at least some things you can do.
Yeah, very simple ones.
First off, like your USB cable, most by default will have data and power lines. You can get charging cables that are just the power lines, no data line at all, which means there's no chance for it to transfer files.
I agree with that. Just so you know, a USB cable essentially has four pins to our power and to our data. And if you don't actually connect the data pins, it's impossible to do anything but charge. There's one attack I do want to bring up that is...
Siri wants to help with the attack too.
Thank you, Siri, but stop listening to me, government. There is one other attack I do want to bring up that is interesting. But I will say I would recommend over cables. If people are really worried about this, I'd rather them buy like a $5, they call them USB condoms. And it's simply just a little USB plug with another end that does the same thing as a data-only cable.
Literally just doesn't have the data lines.
And the reason you do that is it will work with any cable. And the only reason I recommend that over the cable, unless you're technical savvy, is that if you go to the Amazons of the world or online stores, for normal people, it's sometimes hard to really know if this is charging only or data. Mm-hmm. A lot of the third-party vendors that sell on these e-commerce, they're not very good at posting real specs, or they try to make their cable sound more capable than it really is when it's just a cheap. So I would, if you don't know how to make sure you're getting a charging only cable, it's just easier to have a USB condom.
USB condom to protect you from juice jacking. I'm glad we can be adults about this.
The things we say on our podcast. And the benefit of that one is it will work with any device you want to use. Or I'm sorry, any cable you want to use.
You were about to hint at another type of attack with power-only lines, and I'm assuming you're talking about...
Kill USB. So do know there's if you don't have the right circuitry protection in a laptop or a phone, there is a guy that makes this little USB plug. Does not need data, by the way. This is purely on power delivery. So hypothetically, if you do want to get all worried about airport juice jacking, we should make up a new one. What's it called? Juice flowing
or juice charge?
No, we're not good enough to make these marketing names. Yeah, but in this case, forget installing malware. Plugging in could just kill your phone. I mean, literally, these are little devices that have a capacitor that stores up a overcharge than the 5-volt you really want to be getting from your USB power input, and it simply just overwhelms it. And if you don't have the right protection circuitry, it will kill your laptop or kill your phone. And that could be any charger port if some troll comes into an airport. And I assume just like a credit card skimmer, I could probably put a little USB plate over the real USB one that had this built in.
Man, good thing you're a good guy.
That is
the one you would probably be more likely to come across than a zero-day exploit on a data cable.
Yeah, to me, that's the one that would actually work. That's the one that's more likely to actually do something. On the flip side, you also have to think about motivation. No criminal hacker just wants to fry your phone. There's no value in that. It would only be trolls, which I guess do exist. We all live on the internet. I guess those people are out there.
Just wait for Lizard Squad 2.0 Juice Frying Edition or whatever you want to call it.
They'll DOS Extra Life, and then they'll fry all our phones in airports.
Exactly.
They're a bunch of fun hackers we love. Not.
Oh, please don't hack us. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any suggestions for future episode topics or questions about what we chatted on today, don't forget to reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at XORRO underscore, Corey's at SecAdept, and the both of us are at hashtag the 443 podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.